Welcome to America's Commercial Real Estate Show. We want to be your source for market intel, forecasts, and success strategies. Hello, I'm Michael Bull. Thank you for being with us. This segment is brought to you by Bull Realty Asset and Occupancy Solutions. Check it out at bullrealty.com or give me a call because I am Michael Bull. All right. Well, today we're going to talk about retail, retail sales. We're going to talk about the retail market. We're going to talk to some experts involved in the retail sector. And we're also going to talk about the retail investment market. And I think, you know, retail investment market is really interesting to me. We sell a lot of shopping centers and strip centers throughout the Southeast. And it's interesting to see how well some of these properties are performing and how much demand that we see for properties when we take on the market. But we're also seeing some properties that are struggling and some properties that are having problems, servicing the debt. And so it's interesting. The other thing that I think is really interesting about retail properties is their location. So even if they are going through some changes, usually it's really good located real estate. It's usually on Main and Main. It's flat. It's got utilities. It's cleared. It's in a good location. So obviously there's a lot of uses, a lot of change in uses going on. Well, let's start with my first guest. It's Jim Costello. He's Senior VP with Real Capital Analytics, and he's joining us on Skype. Jim, thanks for joining us, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me here.
Well, Jim, as I mentioned in the opening here, it seems like retail is kind of wild and woolly right now, if you will. Seems like there's a lot of great properties performing well, and that we're seeing some distress, at least in some of the markets and properties that we work in. What do you guys see overall, though, when you look at the retail investment market?
Yeah, retail, one issue that I've been pushing to people is that people are painting the retail sector with too broad of a brush, as if internet sales are destroying everything and there's no reason to be in retail. You know, anybody who thinks that is passing up some great opportunities. There are still wonderful cash flowing properties. The challenge at times, I think, is that the best of the best simply doesn't trade. Mm-hmm. If I have the best mall where people are still coming and spending a lot of discretionary money, why sell it? What better asset can I put it into? And that contrasts with some of the things that do sell, where people see transaction activity. Some of the old dead malls, look at some of the deals that were involved in the Centro deal in the last cycle, which had priced around $200 a square foot. Some of those malls are now selling for, you know, $8 to $20 a square foot. Tremendous losses there. But, you know, people focus on that because if it bleeds, it leads. But also, typically, you know, you don't sell the best of the best. And so when you see a transaction, you tend to see, you know, some of the worst in that mall space. And that's what people have been focused on. But there are still great properties and good locations that have been transacting.
So does that mean then when you track retail cap rates overall and you look at the last several years, is that idea that some of the best of the best are not selling and maybe some of the properties, the mediocre more properties are selling? Well, how is that impacting cap rates? Are they flat or are they rising?
Cap rates are generally flat, although in the single tenant net lease space, they've been a little bit more volatile, just given the volatility of the bond markets. You know, we had the 10-year treasury rise up to 2 and then 3.2 and then fall to 2. And, you know, so there's a little bit of movement there because those investors, there's no, it's almost a bond alternative. There's nothing around the leasing that's an upside for them. So, you know, that issue has been distorting things a bit. But the rest of the retail market, it's been relatively flat, in part because investors, if you have a good asset, you don't have to sell in the distress just because rates are moving a bit and just because everybody else is afraid of retail. As long as you can refinance and access capital that way, you can sit pretty for a bit.
Yeah.
The one measure that I've been looking at, more than the cap rates, though, is just looking at the absolute price per pound and looking at price trends. Our commercial property price index, when we segment it by geography across the U.S., you know, the Northeast and the Western states, we're well above where we were in 2007 for prices in those regions. And part of it is that, you know, those parts of the United States have very fast-growing, dynamic, tech-driven economies. And the area that's sort of at the bottom, still below and actually falling now, the 2007 peak levels, is the Midwest, where a lot of the the so-called Rust Belt and a lot of the space that was built to satisfy middle-class workers in the 60s and 70s is being sold at a song, because those middle-class construction, or rather middle-class industrial workers in the 60s and 70s, those jobs are gone. They're not shopping at JCPenney anymore. And so those types of malls are facing challenges.
Yeah, that's interesting. So what do you see on types of properties? You mentioned malls. Are there other types of properties when you look at smaller strip or you look at grocery anchored, where you see some maybe opportunities or better growth?
Yeah, I start with the malls all the time because it's the one that gets the most attention.
Right.
Maybe I've been watching the new season of Stranger Things too much and thinking about the mall there. But when you think about other types of properties, the ones that aren't focused as much on the discretionary income, things focused on, say, day-to-day needs in the grocery world. There hasn't been much movement of cap rates there either because, there's still some steady yield from these assets. And investors, even though there's some fear about retail overall, investors still find those to be attractive assets. Now, that said, deal volume has been down this year for retail, like other types of sectors. There is some uncertainty that has been building just given some of the broader macro issues as this economic cycle gets long in tooth.
Well, Jim, what would you expect for retail cap rates moving forward, given where we are in the economy, where we are with tariffs, where we are in the cycle? Would you expect cap rates on retail to be fairly flat, go up, go down? What do you think?
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts for retail cap rates. And I think the movement in the future for cap rates, I think it's going to vary a little bit based on the type of retail you're looking at. Again, single tenant at lease, that asset type is more of a bond alternative. If interest rates move up from this 2% level for the 10-year treasury, eventually you might see some movements on the single tenant net lease cap rate. Now, it hasn't really moved much relative to where we were at the end of last year. There's been a bit of a widening gap. But eventually, there's sort of some movement that might be involved there. I don't think this 2% level we're at the moment is sustained forever. That's not saying that we're going to go up for the 10-year treasury to 5 or 6% like we had in the distant past. But still, I think we're going to eventually get up from the 2% level. But as that moves, I think we'll see more responsiveness from that single tenant net lease world. Now, other types of property, though, when we get into more of your neighborhood and community centers, dealing a little bit with your day-to-day needs, a little bit of your discretionary income, that type of asset, it's going to be a little less responsive to the movements in interest rates as they do eventually go up. In part, because the story that should drive interest rate increases should be a little bit of growth in the economy that in turn gives people a bit more money to spend. When they have a little bit more money to spend, they'll go to restaurants more and spend money in some of these centers. And so there's a little bit of a race between the two. Is there enough growth to offset the interest rate increases? But at the moment, it just seems like it will be flat until some of the uncertainty in the economy goes away. I don't think you see owners of the best properties selling at a discount just because of worries about where the economy's at.
Yeah, and I was interviewing you for another show, and you mentioned your think tank with a lot of real estate analysts and economists like yourself. And you guys have talked about the cycle. And when you think about retail, is that a sector, Jim, that maybe gets impacted by a change in the cycle or a downturn faster than industrial office because of tenant performance? Does it happen? Does it get impacted faster?
The retail sector, just put aside for the moment, the whole issue of disintermediation by the internet. Even before, it was a sector that had a lot of turnover. Tenants were always experimenting, trying to find new ways to reach out to consumers, and always trying new formats and redoing things. certain types of retail for, say, consumer goods, that's a little bit riskier in the middle of a downturn, because in a downturn, people will not buy a new refrigerator. They'll try and make do for a bit. They'll try and make do with the stove they've got. So anything focused on sort of the heavy consumer goods, you know, that may have a little bit more of a risk, as opposed to the things that are more the day-to-day needs. You know, that type of spending continues in a downturn. So, you know, to the extent you get some weakness, you know, there could be just some disparity in the performance of the assets. But it really depends, you know, what type of tenants have you got? Have you got a mix of all consumer activity in your tenants? Then you may be a little bit safer in that regard.
Okay. Jim, what would you leave our audience with considering if you were talking to a retail property investor today to think about retail moving forward?
You know, I'd leave you with where I started. People are painting retail with too broad of a brush, you know, taking the worst stories on retail and saying that that is impacting all of the retail market. The internet isn't killing retail. Internet sales are only about 10% of all consumer spending. You know, it's not the end of the world because of that. Yes, you've lost bookstores. Yes, you've lost record stores. But, you know, that's just, you know, part of the ongoing change of how, you know, producers of content get in touch with consumers. There's still some great retail properties out there. It's just a matter of, you know, picking the right ones.
Yeah. So should I open this new video rental business I was thinking about opening up in a store?
Blockbuster.
There you go.
Maybe for the hipsters there in Atlanta and Five Points, they'll like that.
There you go. Jim, sir, thanks for joining us. Great information as usual.
Thank you.
If you'd like more information from Jim, check them out and their services at Real Capital Analytics. And stay with us. We'll have more on the retail sector and retail real estate. I'm Michael Bull. This is America's Commercial Real Estate Show.
America's Commercial Real Estate Show is brought to you by Bull Realty. For customized asset and occupancy solutions, visit bullrealty.com. Commercial Agent Success Strategies, incredible training for commercial agents. Visit commercialagentsuccess.com. Red IQ, turning multifamily data into actionable intelligence. Visit rediq.com.
Welcome back to America's Commercial Real Estate Show. I'm Michael Bull. The segment's brought to you by Red IQ. Check it out. They kind of magically take spreadsheets and convert it to analytics that you can use, and does it very quickly for multifamily properties. It's rediq.com. Well, today we're talking about retail real estate, and retail in general. Please welcome my next guest, Stephanie Sigelski, and she is with ICSC, International Council of Shopping Centers, and she's joining us on Skype. Stephanie, good to see you again.
Good to see you. Thank you for having me.
Well, Stephanie, one thing that everyone is aware of and conscious of today is the effect of online sales and what that's kind of done to brick and mortar. And it certainly brought some changes to the brick and mortar retail real estate world. But tell us about what you guys refer to as the halo effect.
Well, the halo effect was part of a report we released last year that said that when a store opens in a market, they see a 37% increase to their web traffic in that market. So having a physical presence drives traffic to the website. We also found that vice versa, if they close a store in the market, they experience a decrease in web traffic in that market. So you can see the synergy between online and physical is actually much more significant than most people think it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because it could be showroom. It could be going to order online. It could be kind of just presence and advertising and sort of top of mind, right?
Absolutely. And it's very much, it brings brand awareness to consumers. You know, the cost of customer acquisition is expensive. So we're seeing more of these digitally native retailers opening brick and mortar locations. And part of that is because of this effect, because it drives that awareness and brand loyalty that people seek and want. So it's an less expensive way to acquire customers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it makes sense. And so I want to ask you about student, you know, spending for students going into the fall. Here we are in the summer of 19. I guess the next spending season, right, is back to school shopping. What do you guys expect?
You know, we will be releasing our results in the next couple of weeks. Deloitte released theirs this morning saying they expect spending to be flat but not decrease year over year, which is fine. Some of that may be due to shifting demographics and fewer children in schools. But overall, you know, it looks to be a strong back-to-school season. The great thing about back-to-school is it doesn't just touch one segment of the market. It's books, it's binders, it's clothes, it's shoes. So all retailers really benefit from the back-to-school season.
Yeah, it makes sense. I think other than Christmas, if I think about my own spending, you know, having children that went through school and now one's finished college and about to finish, yep. I think I do a little spending at that time of year too.
Yeah. I have one moving into an apartment for her sophomore year in college and one going into his junior year of high school. So the spending is very different, but it's significant.
Yeah. Now, you know, retail, as we mentioned, has changed a lot and continues to morph into kind of the new retail of today. And you guys just had the largest conference on retail real estate in the world at Recon, which is in Vegas. So I was wondering, you know, what was really popular out there? Any kind of changes in what you see in popularity?
Absolutely. So we actually had a few different, a few new destinations this year. One was emerging brands, who are those online-only brands going to physical locations, you know, your typical pop-up shops. That we're seeing that consumers love, and health and wellness, which is becoming significant. And that's not just the medical field, that is truly fitness as well. So we saw great interest in all of those. We particularly saw strong interest in health and wellness, especially as it related to the cannabis industry, which is becoming a prominent part of the country at this moment at the state level.
Yeah, and I guess since you're like the TV people, you know, when they kind of throw it back to the anchor. So when you throw it back to me, you could say, ear. No, just kidding. We shouldn't go there, right? I've just seen that on television. So, you know, that figure, that's what they do. Let's talk about collecting online sales tax. You know, how has that impacted? Are the states really collecting online sales tax now? And is it having an effect yet?
Absolutely. So June 23rd was the one-year anniversary since the Supreme Court ruled on the Wayfair v. South Dakota case, which said that a physical nexus was created by an online sales, by online sales. So what we have seen is 43 of the 45 states that collect sales tax have put in some sort of legislation or regulation or reworked what they previously had to begin collecting those sales taxes. And there has been a significant increase in the sales taxes collected. The nice thing is that we're seeing the opponents argued that this would be a burden on the small online sellers. And what states have done is they have set up minimums. So whether that's a minimum number of transactions or a minimum number of sales that take place in that state is what triggers the collection of that sales tax by the retailer. You know, it's important to note that sales tax was legally due anyway. Most consumers don't submit it. I don't submit it, but it is legally due. So this just actually puts the onus on the retailer to collect it and remit that tax. So we have seen great progress. You know, states like or cities like Philadelphia are reporting significant increases in those collections, which is wonderful because that goes to, you know, necessary services like emergency services and schools.
Is any of the brick and mortar retailers or maybe the retailers who do both online and brick and mortar, are they even reporting yet that that's increased their brick and mortar sales?
Not that I have seen. So, you know, we'll wait and see. We're just a year into it. A lot of the regulations have either went into effect the first of this year or actually go into effect later this year or the first of next year. So the next 12 months will be really critical to see what's going to transpire between the two.
Okay. And Stephanie, when you talk to retailers and you talk to retail property owners and those of us in the retail business, what are some of the concerns that, that you most hear about today? Are we concerned about tariffs? Are we concerned about the cycle where we are in economy? You know, what do you hear from folks that maybe is on their mind as a potential concern?
I think there's always concerns. Tariffs are definitely weighing heavily on retailers' minds. That's significant. That's a cost that ultimately gets passed on to the consumer. The economy is always a concern, although even as we see some indications that maybe it's starting to slow and the Fed making moves to possibly cut rates, it remains a strong economy with low unemployment, which is good. And so you're also seeing, again, this from a real estate perspective, this diversification of tenant mix. So you're seeing the food and beverage, you're seeing smaller shops, you're seeing more experience, which, you know, kind of recession-proofs their property. But, you know, definitely there's a close eye on what's going on in Washington and what that means for the future.
Yeah. You know, one thing I seem to see in a lot of centers is a lot of food courts and, you know, a lot of restaurants in a lot of these properties. Are you hearing any concern out there that are we building too many restaurants in some of these places?
No, I don't think so. There's a strong demand. Millennials really want experience. And so that's part of it is the dining aspect. Baby boomers are empty nesters and may not want to cook. And so we're seeing them eat out more. I think you're just seeing more selection in those food choices, which is good. It's not just the same restaurant being built over and over again. And the F&B sector has added over 1 million jobs in the last 3 years. So we've seen that growth. And I think we'll continue to see consumers wanting that experience and that F&B component for some time to come.
Okay. And Stephanie, to finish us up here, what can we look forward to from ICSC moving forward or in the retail world in general or from you guys?
Sure. We are currently working on back to school. We're looking ahead to the holidays. It's that time of the year. It's July. But mostly at July 23rd, we will be releasing the second portion of our Halo studies. So last year, as I mentioned, we looked at web traffic. This year, we're looking at actual spending. So we took a look at over 30 million transactions and deduced down what that translates into spending. So we looked at when somebody makes an online purchase, do they spend in store within 2 weeks? And what is that dollar figure? And vice versa, if they go into a store, do they then go online within 2 weeks and spend additional money? So it's a very positive result. We're very pleased with it. And that will be coming out in the next 2 weeks.
Okay, that's excellent. And you have the big Southeastern convention for ICSC coming up in Atlanta too, right, this fall?
We have a number of events coming up. Fall is very busy. We've got our Western Conference in Los Angeles. We've got Southeastern. We've got Florida. And then, you know, ultimately, first week in December, we have New York Dealmaking here in New York.
Awesome. Well, a lot to look forward to. Stephanie, thanks for joining us. Great information.
Thank you.
All right. And thank you for joining us. Till next week, be sure that you always lead, learn, and laugh. And join us for America's Commercial Real Estate Show.
America's Commercial Real Estate Show is brought to you by Bull Realty. For customized asset and occupancy solutions, visit bullrealty.com. Commercial agent success strategies, incredible training for commercial agents. Visit commercialagentsuccess.com. Red IQ, turning multifamily data into actionable intelligence. Visit rediq.com.